Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Good evening, everybody. Good afternoon. Good morning, depending upon where you are around the world. My name is Jeff Bishop, and we're here with Main Menu Live. First of all, very much of a Happy New Year to all of you. This is the first Main Menu and Main Menu Live for 2008, and we're happy to be back. We had a very nice time away on our holiday break, and we hope that all of you who are listening tonight did as well. Tonight, we bring together our Mac panel again, including a very special guest who we were attempting to reach as we were coming on air. So we'll find out if she's here or not. But let's go ahead and bring up Daryl, and we'll give you the contact information. Then we're going to talk a little bit of technology, give you some updates. And then we're going to dive in with Darcy, Holly, and Shelley from Shelley's Podcast. Hello, Daryl. How's it going?
Wonderful. Hope everybody had a wonderful holiday season. Karen and I went to New England and spent time hanging out with family and playing in the snow.
Yeah. In fact, you did an interactive show from there, and so we got to hear from you from there, and it was really, really enjoyable.
Indeed. So shall I go ahead with the contact information?
Yeah, let's do that, and then we'll bring up a couple of technology topics. And actually, we want to talk a little bit to our panel about some of these, because I think we'd want to get their opinion on some of these things, too. So go ahead, and then we'll give I'll give the phone number when you're done there.
Okay, if you'd like to get a hold of us, you can email mainmenu@acbradio.org. You could add mainmenu@acbradio.org to Windows Live Messenger and talk with us via that method. And you can keep track of us. We'll have some show notes and different things on Twitter. That page is twitter.com/mainmenu. That's twitter.com/mainmenu. And finally, you may dial 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Yeah, we don't have the lines open at the moment, but we'll let you know when it's safe safe to do that. And remember that the show is heard live between 2 and 3 Universal. And if you're listening to the show outside of that time, 2 to 3 Universal, of course, is 9 to 10 Eastern, 6 to 7 Pacific. And if you're listening outside of that time, do not call. If you do call the number, we will be having it forward to a Main Menu hotline where you can leave a message, and our Main Menu production team will be picking that up. We'll have that done after the show tonight, so stay tuned for that. We'll have that up. That's something new, but you'll be able to leave voicemail for us if you have any topic suggestions or any questions of any of our guests. You can call 866-400-5333. During the show or outside of the show, if you want to leave any comments. Well, it's been rather interesting. It's been a rather interesting time since we've been last on, and I think one of the big things that's been going on is this issue of DRM-free music. It looks like Napster. And Daryl, have you seen much on this?
No, not yet. Is Napster getting into the game now?
Yeah, second quarter of this year, you're going to be able to download all of your tracks from Napster as MP3s.
Wahoo!
Yeah, and Amazon has increased their music library now with two more.
Knew about that.
And of course, Sony got into the game. You know, BMG got into the game, but and I wanted to find out from our panel what they think, because it sort of impacts everybody, really. So let's welcome them, then we'll keep going on the technology front here. Let's warmly welcome Darcy and Holly. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Welcome back. Did you have a nice Christmas?
We did.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, good. What did Santa bring you for Christmas?
I got lots of DVDs.
Yeah, same here, really. DVDs are the big gift for both of us this year, actually.
You did not get the new Mac Pro?
No, I didn't. That wasn't in my stocking.
No, the new quad, actually, it's I think it's even bigger than quad.
Eight core.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Eight core Mac Pro. Shelley, you didn't get that for Christmas, did you?
Well, considering they just announced it today, no, I didn't get it.
Well, I thought, I thought maybe Santa gave you a certificate. You know.
You know, I actually bought a Mac Mini a couple weeks before Christmas, so Santa gave me a free printer to go with it.
Oh,
so
good. Did you see?
There you go.
Did you guys see the article that Apple stores are outselling PC stores 10-1?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, that was on CNET, I believe. If I'm not I could be mistaken. I saw it in my RSS reader, and I was like, "Wow, that's pretty amazing."
So they keep that up, they'll be increasing their market share very quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, very interesting. Okay, well, and welcome to you, Shelley. We haven't had you on in...
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, this may be your first... Is this your first time on Main Menu or second?
I think it might be my second. I know you and I did a roundtable a while back, but I can't remember if it was for Main Menu or not. It was a really long time ago.
Yeah,
so it's great to be here. Thanks, Jeff, for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you. And so now, did you guys hear about this Sony plan for DRM-free music?
Yes.
Is that where you buy the card and you take it home and you put in a...
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I honestly don't see that. I mean, that's like all the downsides of both things. I mean, you buy it, you pay for it right away, but you don't get to hear it until you get home. So what's the point?
You might as well buy the CD.
Well, you have to download it, too. Yeah.
Might as well either buy the CD or download it digitally.
I mean, I can see it as a gift card option, but only as an option. I would think the default would be that you'd have a website where you buy stuff, and then you could go to a store just the way you can buy an iTunes card in the store and buy the card.
Exactly.
I think
they missed the point.
Very interesting. Well, the other thing that I wanted to touch on, because I think it really is very important to talk about this from a privacy standpoint, is this issue with Robert Scoville. And now, I know all of you are RSS readers out there. On our panel.
Let's fill everybody in, though.
Yeah, exactly. So are you guys aware of what happened there?
Yes. No. In fact, I blogged about it a couple days ago.
Yes, so. I noticed that. So
we're out of the loop, then.
So you wanna give us a heads up on it, Shelley, and then let's talk about it a little bit.
Well, Robert Scoville, who is a very well-known blogger, he blogged for Microsoft for a number of years, and now he's working with a company called Podtech, and he's about to leave them. But basically, Robert is a guy who blogs about blogs and blogs about technology. He's also a very, very big proponent of social networking and social blogging. And if you friend Robert on Twitter or if you friend him on Facebook, he will friend you back. And Robert has about 5,000 Facebook friends, and that's just what he believes in terms of communication with folks. And so what he did was he ran a script on his Facebook profile, which grabbed the names, the email addresses, and the birth dates of his 5,000 Facebook friends and attempted to grab that information so that he could use it for a system I'm not really familiar with called Plaxo Plus. And he's working with this company called Plaxo as an alpha tester. But the problem that came into play was when he took all of this information of his friends that was on Facebook and grabbed it for either his own personal use or for the use of this Plaxo service. And so the initial reaction was, how dare you question, you know, let Robert... They threw him off Facebook. Sorry, I skipped that part. Facebook said, you're using a script. That's not in our terms of service. You're gone. So Robert made a big deal about it on his blog, and there were a few people who came out and said, free the Scoville 5000, and this is, you know, shameful. You should let Robert take his friend information and use it as he wishes. But that was the key to it. Was it his friend information, or was it the information that belonged to those 5,000 people who had friended Robert on Facebook? And so that's the crux of the issue now. He's back on Facebook, but I maintained in my blog post for bloggerandpodcaster.com a couple days ago, and I still maintain that the real issue is the privacy of those individuals who friended Robert on Facebook but didn't expect their email addresses and other information to be accessible from some other source and usable by him in any way he wants to. And even if Robert has no malicious intent, the question is, from a privacy point of view, can you be sure that when you give your information to a social networking site that you're going to continue to maintain control of it and that somebody you friended won't become a spammer or use your information in a way that you're not comfortable with?
Well, this has really been talked about even on national talk radio programs. And I heard about it on one of them, and I called in because the point was being made there that really they were making the point that really it was his data. And my point on this is that it's not really your data. It's Facebook's data. I mean, unless you own the server, you know, there's no guarantee that you're going to have the data there tomorrow. And I think I'll tell you what I did do to this. I've been a long time Plaxo user, and Plaxo. Hey, Daryl, can you mute? Your typing's coming across. I've been a long time Plaxo user, and I just one second here. I've been a long time Plaxo user. And I've really enjoyed it. For those that don't know what Plaxo does, Plaxo allows you to synchronize your address book with Outlook or Outlook Express and maintain it there and maintain it on the server. And there's some social aspects to this. So you can do that. But the fact that Plaxo even wrote a tool like this that will go out and scrape these sites and suck in this data willingly, in my case, I think it's unwillingly. I went ahead and actually deleted my account off of Plaxo because I don't trust a company that's going to go out and scrape my data off of other services. I don't know what they're going to do with it. I mean, you know, who knows? Are they going to spam people? Now, Plaxo in the past has done that, and they've since apologized for it. There was a situation where they went ahead and emailed everybody that was in their address book an ad for Plaxo. In fact, many of you may have gotten a Plaxo ad from me. So it's things like that that I don't know. I really question the. I mean, I think social networks are good, but I think they can be also quite difficult as well. So what do you guys?
The other thing is he was doing something that was against the user agreement for Facebook. So
yeah, exactly. I don't think he should have gotten his account back.
No, I agree. I actually agree. And I think, unfortunately, a guy like Robert Scoble is going to get a lot of press and attention, and for whatever reason, he's going to get his account back.
Yeah,
and
if he wasn't Scoble, he wouldn't get it back. Yeah.
No.
Right. He also wouldn't have scraped quite the large amount of data. I think it's good that it's a controversy, though. I think it's good that we're talking about it, because Facebook and a lot of other services actually allow you to use your own address book and essentially mine that information and go out and issue invitations to people to join the social network. But you as the user have control of that. And if your
Correct.
Friends get angry at that, then you have to deal with them. But it's not like something that Plaxo did, or it's not like what Robert did, where he took data that wasn't his, that was either Facebook's or the person who gave
right.
that information
exactly.
to Facebook.
Right.
But either way, it wasn't his.
Nope. Even though
so
it was
do we want to talk about the accessibility dimensions to this?
Yeah, but the one thing that really scares me too about this, and then we'll talk about the accessibility issues, the really huge thing that scares me about this is that Robert said that it was put into a test account on Plaxo. So Robert really has no idea what they're going to do with it. He can't guarantee anybody that they're not going to use it for something. It's really a scary
exactly.
Situation. Mm-hmm. Now, Nikki Colby, many of you know her as Puppy Braille, sent Daryl and I an email. And Daryl, you want to talk about this?
Yes. So the other shoe that falls is that the email address in your friend's profile information is apparently provided in a graphical format. And interestingly enough, it appears to be even a graphical format that doesn't have any sort of alt tag associated with it. So if you are a legitimate user and you happen to be blind or visually impaired, you don't get your friend's email address. And that's understandable. And I'm not even necessarily saying that Facebook should provide that information in text format. However, I think that there should be an alt tag that says email address that is also happens to be a link, and you click on that link and you send an email message to your friend through your Facebook account. In other words, I think you need to provide accessibility to the purpose of that information, even if maybe it's not a good idea to provide text access to that information per se.
So is the email address, is it actually the email address, but like rendered in a graphic? Like if
yes.
you were cited, could you read it?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, but it makes you
yes,
wonder
and
how
the,
Robert
and
can...
there is another site that I'm aware of that does this. It's QRZ.com. It's the amateur radio call sign lookup mm-hmm. database.
Yeah.
But very then if you had if yeah. you had a link to the email address, wouldn't that then the spammers could somehow... I'm assuming it's in a graphic to keep spammers from getting it.
Yeah, that's
right.
That,
but what
right.
would happen then is it would be you'd go to a web page, you'd have to fill out a form in order to send them the email. You'd never see their email address.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not clear on all the details of this. I know that there is an application, and for those of you who haven't used Facebook, there are applications that you can add to it. There is an application that Facebook users can use called Email Me Instead. And I believe that that application will expose the email address on your profile specifically so that you can read it in text format. And I'm not 100% sure of that, but the way to check that out, and I'm sort of quickly trying to do that as we talk, is to use the Email Me Instead application.
Okay, great. Yeah,
right, but I may not necessarily want to. I may want to have the same protection as a sighted user. I may not want my email address in text format.
Right, right. I
want to provide the same functionality to everyone, and I may not want to allow access to that.
Right. I mean, that's a very good point. I'm just saying if that was your concern as a user who wanted to give your email address out, and I would probably opt the other way. I think I actually have Email Me Instead enabled, if only because I don't check Facebook as often as I check my email. But you're right, the choice should be there, and that's the point.
And well. and this link, my proposal should be, if you don't have email instead, it should be one way or another. So it should be email instead, or it should be alt text with an accessible link. In other words, whatever choice the user makes ought to be one that reasonably accommodates accessibility too.
But hold on a second, sure. Isn't this a moot point? If Scovel could scrape Facebook for email addresses, phone numbers, dates of birth. Isn't it really irrelevant? Because someone's going to figure out how Plaxo did this, and spammers are going to get the data anyway.
Well, I don't know. You know, from my point of view, I'm not really weighed in on this controversy except for the accessibility aspect of it. I mean, I think both sides of the controversy can duke it out, and whatever happens, happens. But you know, the average user isn't going to be able to get this information if they need to email someone on Facebook and they need that information, they're not going to hack and get it. Besides, I would expect Facebook to somehow close this loophole or something.
But my point being that the spammers that want the information, they're going to get it regardless. Regardless of using an image or not. So I'm not really sure an image does as much good. It's sort of the whole point of CAPTCHA, you know, which
CAPTCHA's broken by and large.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think in terms of this controversy, which I do care about, Facebook did the right thing. And whether some other scripter or spammer is able to gather the information or not, at least they did the right thing in terms of terminating Scovel. But then they let him back on, and I don't know whether that was just due to the controversy of the public. He said, I'm not going to do it. Well, he didn't even say, I'm not going to do it again. He made some explanation that satisfied them. And he got back on, but the question is, in the future, if this happens, what's the viability of Facebook as a platform that people want to be a part of? And there's a whole other issue going on, and I wish I had the link with me, of how difficult it actually is to get your own account removed from Facebook, and how Facebook actually tells you it's more difficult than it really is. But it's not as simple as saying, please cancel my account. So Facebook is problematic, not as problematic as MySpace, which is a whole kettle of fish. I don't even want to. I won't go near MySpace.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, there's issues.
Well, all right. Well, enough on this. But I just thought it was kind of important to bring up, and it's definitely been a topic that's been discussed on blogs and even on national talk shows. So it's been rather interesting. Well, let's get on to the topic at hand, and that being Mac. And one of the reasons I asked Shelley to come on is because, you know, we've talked a lot about the Mac just from general features and Leopard features, like, you know, and stuff like that. But Darcy and Holly are totally blind, right, guys?
Correct.
Right. So I wanted to get some perspective from someone who is partial Because I know Shelley, you have some vision difficulties, but you are able to see your screen.
And, that's right.
So I wanted to, you know, we've talked about the Braille support, we've talked about the speech support in Leopard. You obviously are probably using Leopard, right, Shelley?
I am using Leopard on one machine and Tiger on another because there have been some issues with the MacBook and Leopard, and I'd actually be interested to hear what Darcy and Holly have to say about Leopard on the MacBook, but I haven't quite had the courage to put Leopard on the MacBook yet, but it's on the Mac Mini.
Oh, what do you guys think
about that? We have Leopard on both of our MacBooks, and there hasn't really been any issues.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
Great.
What kind of issues were you...
Yeah, what kind of issues?
Well, basically sort of weird incompatibility issues, not huge issues, but I think odd crashes and freezes and stuff. And, I mean, actually, I mean, I'm joking. I said I haven't had the courage. I think what it really means is the Mac Mini was a new machine. I put Leopard on it. I haven't put Leopard on the MacBook because it's my production machine, and I just haven't gotten to it, and I didn't need the functionality specifically. But I've used the Mac Mini with Leopard and have some sense of what does and doesn't work and have had really good luck with it. And as I told people when I did it, I didn't have any problems in terms of the install and upgrade. So a lot of the problems that people were having as far as that goes didn't affect me. But I'm still reading about Leopard and MacBook problems, which kind of surprised me. I figured that would go away after about a month or so, and I'm glad to hear you guys aren't having any problems. But
We're doing fine. But I guess really, I mean, one of the reasons we upgraded, obviously, was because of VoiceOver. But if you don't use VoiceOver, and, you know, they talk about 300 features, but I don't know that there's a lot of them that would really be, like, if you know, Tiger is fine, then, you know, that's probably not a huge reason to upgrade necessarily right away.
There are two things that are, well, one thing that everybody who might want to upgrade to Leopard would want to consider, Time Machine, because it's seamless backup, it's wonderful. Ironically, I guess for this audience, screen sharing, which I use to control my Mini from my Tiger. Well, I control either the Mini from the Tiger machine or vice versa. So
screen
I really
sharing
like
works for us.
Yeah, it's.
Oh, Skype is getting us. Hold on, everybody. Let's see if we can.
Here we go.
Oh,
are we back?
Yeah, we're back.
We're back.
Okay, good.
Life is good again.
Yes. So I've had nothing but good experiences with Leopard, but I still haven't put it on my MacBook. Although I'm going to Macworld next week, and something tells me when I get home, I'll put Leopard on. I want it on all the machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So now, how many low vision features are you using on the Mac, Shelley?
Well, it's part of the accessibility suite in Mac OS X. I use the reverse video. So I have a darker background with light text, which is my preferred way of working. And so I also enhance the contrast. And I find that enhancing the contrast within the accessibility features is a better fit for me than actually physically using the knobs on the monitor and changing the contrast. And so that is pretty consistent through Tiger and Leopard. It hasn't really changed. I do use VoiceOver I do use Leopard features in the sense that I use a piece of software called Books to Burn, which you guys may know about, which will take text and convert it to a text file and convert it to speech. So if I have a long, say an article from a blog or a newspaper that I want to read, I mean like a really long article, or if I have a book that's in text rather than audio format, I will use Books to Burn to convert it to audio from text. And I like the Alex voice a lot in Leopard, so
I've not used Books to Burn, but I did make a little automator workflow that does that same sort of deal. Like you can just send a file
with
you know,
text edit, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it uses text edit, and then Alex reads it, and then I have it.
The only thing I've noticed about Alex is he's a little fast. Sometimes he steps on himself a little bit with the speech, and it's great. It's a big improvement over Victoria for long, long passages. But he's a little speedy sometimes.
Have you noticed breathes, Shelley?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have you noticed that he breathes, Shelley? When he talks?
It's weird. It's really uncanny.
Very weird.
It's very odd. I mean, I've never heard a you know, a speech synthesizer do that. And when I heard that the first time, after the show that we talked about that, I went and downloaded some books, some Daisy books that are using the Alex voice. And I'll tell you, it was sort of freaky listening to that.
One of the things you can do, I don't know if this works within Books to Burn or not, but you can put little tags within the file to control the rate. Like you can put rate and then how many words per minute you want them to speak in. And so that might be a way to get it too if you find them talking too fast.
Yeah,
I don't think Books to Burn can do that. I can probably do it with... So you use TextEdit, and then what do you use to control the rate? Is that within the speech control panel, yeah, or the system prep?
Well, for some reason, the automator text-to-audio file action doesn't seem to honor that. Like, it always seems to go at a very slow rate. It doesn't honor the speech control and control panel. So what I do, I usually have him reading at around 300 words a minute. So what I'll do is at the beginning of a file that I want to work with, I'll just put in like, it's like left bracket, rate, 300, right bracket, and it tells them to go to that speed, yeah.
Yeah, I think now that you mention that, I mean, I remember trying Automator, because Books to Burn has problems with file sizes. If you put too much text in at once, like what I'll do, we have a local weekly newspaper, the Austin Chronicle, that I like to read, and I can get it via RSS, but I can't get it audio. So what I do is I take several articles and I put them in Books to Burn and I have it chapterize it so that it splits it at a predefined text string that I give it. But if you give it too much text, Books to Burn will crap out. So I try to do an automated workflow, and I think I had that problem, that there were things that I couldn't control in the way that I wanted to. So I went back to Books to Burn and just started using smaller files.
So do we have a website where one could learn more about or get Books to Burn?
If you guys talk while I look it up, then we will.
Okay,
and
good.
And I will add that to the show notes.
Okay, good. We have a question from Tim Mahak that came in actually during this week, and the phone lines are now open, by the way, 866-400-5333.
Oh, yeah, we did.
400-5333. I have it right here, Daryl. This has to do with Safari and tables. And according to him, now, I don't know if he was using Tiger or Leopard, or not even using either one, but just more so just getting it, wanting to find out from what he's heard. He's saying that tables have been a problem as far as navigating tables using Safari and VoiceOver. And I just wanted to find out from Darcy and Holly or Shelley what you think of that.
Well, it doesn't really see them as a table per se. But you can navigate them. I mean, because of the way VoiceOver works when you're navigating the web, it doesn't work. Like, when you look at the way JAWS and Window Eyes works, it's kind of linear anyway. Like, you know, you just basically, your web page is, you know, straight down. Like, there's no columns or anything. But the way VoiceOver works, since you have a more of like a two-dimensional version of the web page, then you can still navigate. Like, if you find a table, you can still move down and you'll hear the various, like you'll go down the column and you can move across the row. So it's not, like I said, it doesn't tell you it's a table like it does in other areas of OS X, but I've not had any trouble, using them.
In some ways it's better because like if you have you can just go down the column instead of hearing each row name and then each part of the...
Yeah, I actually really like the way Safari works in that whole idea where everything's in columns because I think I have more of an idea what the page looks like visually. And like if someone tells me, for example, you know, something's on the right-hand side of the page, I can have a, you know, that could be anywhere in the window screen readers, but I kind of have an idea where that is. So so I guess yes and no would be the answer there as far as
interesting
tables.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Shelley, now this may not be as much of a problem for you visually, right?
No, I actually don't have anything useful to add. I use Firefox for one thing. And so,
yeah, because that's not accessible.
I'll let Darcy's answer stand on that one.
That's not accessible, is it, Darcy?
No. Last I heard, the Firefox people were working on it. There is something, and I think you can get this for Windows as well, there's something called Firebox, which is an extension, I think, for Firefox, and that will make it talk. And I know people have been using Firefox.
I'm not sure if it works under Leopard, though.
Oh, really?
I don't know. Don't quote me on that.
I don't know either.
Okay, we have a caller.
Also,
oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Shelley.
I was just going to say, I found the Books to Burn URL, and I sent it to Daryl, but I'll tell it to you as well. It's sourceforge.net/projects/books-to-burn, and that's number 2.
Okay, good. Great. That's great. Okay. Kelly Saperja has called in. Now, Kelly, I don't think you're a Mac guy.
Thank you, Shelley.
But that's okay. Welcome to Main Menu Live. How you doing tonight?
Doing pretty good, great to hear everybody on there.
That's right. Okay. How can we help you tonight?
I just had a couple of questions. I'm not a Macintosh user, although I've been kind of interested in them for a while. I was wondering if there are any good games that you can play on the Mac.
Ah, games, yes. Okay. And why don't you ask your other question, and we'll let you listen on the air.
Okay. Well, now, you have to excuse me here, because as I say, I'm a totally new user.
No problem.
I'm not familiar with it, but with the Safari, that's the browser.
Yes.
Is it when you're navigating a website? Does it work with, let's say, a virtual cursor style interface like you would find, let's say, JAWS or WindowEyes, or is it a kind of a different browsing experience altogether?
Okay, Kelly, we'll let you listen on the air. Do you have any more questions?
No.
Okay, we'll let you listen on the air, and thank you for calling in, Kelly. All right, let's first answer the browser question, and then we'll get to games.
Yeah, I was going to say, why don't we do the browser first, because it ties into what we were talking about before.
Sure, exactly.
It's not a virtual cursor. It's you're actually interacting with the page all the time, which is nice in one respect, because if somebody sighted's there, they can see what you're doing and where you are.
Sometimes it makes things a little difficult to find on the page, but once you sort of get the idea of how to navigate, it's actually, I find it a lot easier to navigate in the style of Safari than the virtual cursor style.
And you can jump to headings and visited links and things of that nature, like you could with the virtual cursor. It's a different experience.
Takes some getting used to.
It does take some getting used to. I know that's what turns a lot of people off at first, but if it's the kind of thing, I wouldn't say either solution is better, but they both have their advantages and disadvantages. And I find personally that I now prefer the way Safari does it, but other people may not share that. It's hard to say.
I have to say, if you're switching from if you're a very avid Windows screen reader user and you're switching over to a Mac, you definitely want to look into the voiceover, you know, into the documentation a little bit, into the keystrokes that are used, because I was working with my sister-in-law's MacBook computer over Christmas break, and I was able to do some things with it, but I had a heck of a time, especially at first.
Well, one of the things that's great that they've done in Leopard, see, one of the things Tiger had when you first turned on your Mac, you got this guided tour sort of, and it would take you through these little mini lessons, like teach you how to use some of the key commands. But then once you were past the setup, you couldn't really get to that again without downloading a utility from Apple. But one of the things they've done in Leopard is you can what was it? Is it
Command Control Option F8?
Yeah, Control Option F8.
Command.
Oh yeah, Command Control Option F8 will bring up this tutorial at any time. So you can, if you're using somebody else's MacBook, you could, or any Mac really, you could go through that tutorial, and you would.
Can remember that key combination.
Yeah. Well, the first three buttons after the space bar on the left hand side, if you push those, and you push F8, it should work. So.
Cool.
You can do that in an Apple Store too. If you turn on VoiceOver and do this thing, you could play around with it a little bit.
So you could walk
that really
up.
Helps you get a handle on the commands.
You could go to an Apple Store and turn VoiceOver on all the Macs.
Yeah, it's been done, believe me.
Drive people.
I'm sure there have been a couple times where crazy. I've been at Apple Store and I'll turn on VoiceOver and then I'll walk away from it and think, oh, I forgot to turn off VoiceOver.
Yeah.
The next person who's playing with this thing is going to wonder.
Actually,
what's going on.
The same thing works with the reverse video functionality, which is great too, because I can walk into an Apple Store, or when I go to a press event like at Macworld Expo where they have Macs in the press room, I can't tell you, well, you understand how exciting it was to be able to walk up to any Mac and make it accessible for me by just doing a few key commands, just doing one key command, and, you know, there it was. And VoiceOver is the same way. And, you know, whatever criticisms people have about VoiceOver and accessibility and stuff like that, it's just amazing that you can walk up to any machine and voila, you can work with it.
It's really empowering, too.
Yeah,
that's my one fangirl moment. That's all you'll get from me.
No. Put as many of those fangirl moments in as you'd like.
We have a question from Peter.
Okay, we also have a phone call, but we should answer the game question.
Should we tackle this game thing first?
Let's tackle the game thing.
This is a question for Shelley, and we're just talking about low vision.
Go
ahead, Daryl.
What order do you want to do this in?
All right.
Yeah, because you have the game question outstanding. You probably ought to talk about that.
Okay.
All right, and then we'll answer, then we'll do yours and Tim's. Never mind. Go ahead, Darcy.
Okay, well, games are kind of limited at this point. There have been a few of the companies who have promised future things. If any of you have played the game Sound RTS on Windows, you can run that on the Mac. At least you could in Tiger. I assume you probably can in Leopard, but I don't, because it's a Python thing.
I think it's using an older version of Python, so.
Yeah, so I've not tried it, but I know it's worked in previous it worked in Tiger. What else is there? Well, anything that you play on the web obviously would work, like that works in the Windows world, and that's about it right now.
Well, there's that other Terrestrial Invaders game that, like, a lot of the cross-platform games as they are can work on the Mac, but there
are many We did a demo of Terrestrial Invaders on Screenless Switchers a few episodes back, so you could go and check that out if you wanted to.
I think it's more of a proof of concept thing, though.
Yeah, it's not a particularly fun game, but it exists. So
interesting. Okay.
I think it's still early yet, and people are working on it.
Yeah, I think we're gonna see stuff, but we're not there yet, unfortunately. So
okay. Well,
there's chess. The chess game that comes with the Mac is accessible.
Oh yeah.
Is it really?
I always forget about that. But
wow.
Yes. When you move around the board,
and that's been for a long time too. It's really cool. It talks to you. It's great.
Yeah, when you move around the board, you hear the coordinates and you hear what's there. And
if you know how to play chess, it would be really really fun. But I unfortunately do not know how.
Yeah, me neither. But that's accessible. Apparently, you can even use the voice recognition features of the Mac on that. You can voice your moves, but. I don't really know much about chess.
If you know what you're doing again.
D2 to D4.
Basically.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Very interesting. Okay. Yeah. Checkmate. All right. Well, let's take our caller here. Then we'll answer the other questions we have here that have come in. And Danny, how you doing tonight?
Doing okay. Thank you.
Great. You have a question, and we'll let you listen off air. Okay.
Yes. Two quick questions. First, I got really. Is there any remedy for the dilemma that I can no longer go onto SA Mobile's site and read my mail because, unfortunately, Tiger 10.4.11 does not see the scroll bars with which I must interact. And the people at the Apple store even said I was doing everything right with their machines in Leopard and just could not get to those scroll bars. I had to download 10.4.10 from someone and put it on my FireWire drive and do it that way. And also, this is a main menu question in general. Do you plan on covering more Linux someday? I'm thinking about gravitating into Linux one day. And that's all.
Okay, we'll answer both of those questions and we'll let you listen off air, okay?
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to answer the Linux question, and sure, we'd be happy to cover that if we can.
I have some great ideas for that, so some guests that we might be able to have on to talk about that sometime in the fairly near future.
I think it would be really interesting would be to get Peter Korn's group. Well, maybe we can work on that to talk about the...
We could get Janina Sajka and some of those people on.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Danny, and we'll work on that. And let's see. Let's let Darcy and Holly take a crack at this one first, and then we'll throw it over to Shelley. This may not be as much of an issue for you, Shelley, because you could probably see those scroll bars. But have you dealt with that at all?
If I'm not mistaken, we had a similar question last time, and I think what it was, if I remember correctly, is it was an issue with the multi-select list boxes, and apparently there's a bug in Leopard
And apparently in Tiger 4.0.
Yeah, and I guess the latest version of Tiger, that multi-select list boxes don't seem to work with VoiceOver in Safari. So there is definitely a bug there. And I guess all you can really do is people. I know that Apple has been contacted about it, and
Them again.
Just keep everyone who's running into this should contact them, because I have to imagine the more people they hear from, the
I think there's going to be a new version soon, so hopefully.
And isn't this ironic too, right? Because obviously that is an accessible website, yet it is not accessible under certain conditions.
The thing is, as I understand it, because of the way the Mac works, it's not like VoiceOver isn't just one piece of software like JAWS or WindowEyes. It's got it's got components all over the operating system, so probably what happened is, somebody upgraded something, like one of the Apple teams updated something, and that broke something in accessibility-wise, and that's going to happen. So all we can do is contact them, and hopefully, as Holly says, when the next version, like when 10.5.2 is out, which I believe is coming out, I read somewhere that it's coming out soon, or at least that's the rumor. Hopefully they'll fix it.
Shelly, when's it coming out? You should know.
Accessibility at apple.com. If you write them, let them know.
The problem with operating system upgrades is that all the hardware tends to overshadow. And so everybody would wait with bated breath even Leopard, before it came out, a lot of people sort of got tired of waiting, and so they entertained themselves with the iPhone for 6 months. So it was hard to get advanced information about Leopard. And then the same thing with 5.2. All I'm hearing about are portable small notebooks and iPhone 2 and all that stuff like that. And I'm like, 10.5.2, 5.2, who cares about that? But my only comment on this, and I don't have any real information, if the problem is either in Safari or in Java or in something underlying it, I wonder whether there are components, and I don't know which ones. I have to troubleshoot individually with the situation. I wonder if those individual components can be rolled back. Like, if you could get an older version of Safari, would that help, or do you really need to go back to 10.4.1.0? Because as you say, it's not a Leopard issue. It's something that obviously was introduced in the last version of Tiger, and I don't know whether that's because they revved Safari or that they rev some other component that Safari depends on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Doesn't sound like the operating system or VoiceOver. It sounds like something else is...
Uh-oh. Skype is giving us fits again.
Uh-oh.
I think... Oh, you guys there?
Everybody's
here.
Yeah,
right? Sounds good to me.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, because you went away in mid-sentence there, Shelley.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's not your fault. It's the world.
Just tell me. Just there's something you want me to repeat. I will. Otherwise,
we'll just go on. No. I think we got it. We do have another phone call, and let's. Okay. Now this is a shocking. This is kind of shocking to hear, but Shane Jackson is here with us tonight, and it looks
Shane.
And it looks like he joined the land of the Mac. Hey, Shane, how's it going?
Wow.
It's going
another
great.
Mac convert.
Well, welcome. I'm going to tell you the same thing I told Jeff. I told Jeff I've turned to the Mac and I'm not going back.
Great. Do you have a question tonight?
I sure do, and I need it urgently because we're starting our own business down here in Alabama, an adaptive technology company called Eyes on Technology, and we just got our legal stuff done Friday, but I got to have some web development here, and Jeff, I'll hang up and listen to the responses, but I need to know, is there any accessible web editing software? Now, I've heard about content management, but I don't know if I want to go that route or not. How are you guys, especially the Totals, handling web editing and web design? And Jeff, I want to thank Darcy and Holly for Screenless Switchers episode 19 and this main menu. You guys have been an extreme help to me with the podcasting thing. As soon as I get Sound Studio, you're going to hear a lot more about the Mac. So I'll say hey to Daryl and Shelley and everybody else here and hang up and let you guys answer. And thank you, Jeff, for providing this service for us.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's dive into this. Now, of course, my answer to this would be TextEdit. But I'm not really sure that's the answer he wants. But
I'll pick it up. This is Daryl. If you want to hand code your page, then you are definitely looking at using a text editor and hand coding your HTML.
I've seen messages from Shane on the one Mac list, and I think what he, if I'm not mistaken,
he wants
not
a suite
to speak for Shane, but I think he was using something like Dreamweaver on the Windows side, so I think that's what he's looking for, something like that on the Mac.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to come to. I've tried a number of things. So we can cover the Mac if you guys have done web design. But what I was going to say was, as far as web design in general, not platform specific, I would say if you really don't want to use a text editor and code by hand, at least definitely on the Windows side, you could try Dreamweaver. Or, personally, just from the standpoint of maintaining your website, keeping it updated, allowing a number of people to collaborate and update the site. You know, I've used a blogging and or content management systems for almost 3.5 years now, and I wouldn't go back.
I could imagine hand coding websites. And
let's ask Shelley this first, from a partial standpoint first. Now, Shelley, what are you using? Are you hand coding stuff, or what are you using to do your web development?
Well, I use most of the web development, and I say that laughingly because it's mostly blog based, whether it's podcasts or whether it's actual blogs. I use a couple different packages on the Mac. One's called Mars Edit. It's from the same guys who do NetNewsWire, which is an awesome RSS.
Oh, the NewsGator
and
people.
I don't know. No. Actually, they bought them. That's right. I forgot. NewsGator bought them. And I don't know the accessibility of this from a voiceover standpoint, so you'll just have to bear with me. I'll just tell you what I'm doing. Mars Edit is a great tool, especially if you're managing posts to multiple blogs. And it now has the ability, it's always had the ability to include some HTML and some links in a fairly automated fashion. But now there's the ability to go and grab images if you want. And I like it because I can manage multiple blogs. I can say whether I want my comments open or closed. It knows Blogger. It knows WordPress. It probably knows Drupal, but I'm not sure. TypePad. All the platforms that folks tend to use. For my podcast, I use a piece called Feeder from a company named Reinvented Software, and it's a straight forms-based application that I'm sure would be accessible just based on looking at it in terms of it's all fields. You know, you just enter the name and the description and the dates and all the information that you need, and I use that to hand code my XML feeds for my podcast. And then once I'm done with that, I go and I make a blog entry with Mars Edit.
Interesting.
So using a platform like WordPress, it's really easy because the nice thing too is that I have the option to hand code it. Once I have, and I have a web host that built my WordPress system for me in an automated way. I use DreamHost, and I know a lot of people have strong feelings one way or another about DreamHost. I have been lucky. I've been fortunate, and it's great because out of the box you can basically say, I want to start a WordPress blog, and it will assist you in generating the databases that you need, so it gets you up and running, and then you can use something like Mars Edit to go and edit the blog entries, and you can hand code the sidebars and the other subsidiary pages that you need to, and obviously that's accessible because it's all text-based, and you can use FTP or you can use the blog interface itself. So I feel your pain in terms of full-fledged content management systems. I mean, if you need something that actually does more than just generate blog entries, I'm a little out of my depth in terms of recommending one that's accessible. It's actually something that I need to look into for various reasons, but it's kind of a whole order of magnitude different than just managing blogs or podcasts or personal websites. But if you're doing a business, that might be what you want. So
yeah, exactly. Okay, Darcy and Holly, you have anything to add there?
We were pretty much just going to agree with Shelley there that and Daryl that really a content management solution is really what you want, because we use Drupal for our sites, and it's pretty good. I like it. I've thought about checking out WordPress just because that seems to be what everyone is using now, and I'm curious to see the differences. But that's the way that
Well, but if he wants to do a business, I don't know if content management...
Well, you know,
I mean, I guess you
I think it depends.
Drupal is so flexible,
let's
though.
Let's define our terms here, okay? Content management is just broadly defined as I can get my content onto a website in an automated way. I've got, whether it's a template or whether it's some other sort of site into which you're pouring content. That could be something like a blog management tool, importing into WordPress or importing into a Drupal blog, or it could be content management systems the way, say, a newspaper or a magazine would use it, where they actually have custom templates that are, you know, written from scratch and that are XML-based in a lot of cases and use a lot of complex cascading style sheets and stuff like that. So blogging is a subset of content management in the way I'm trying to explain it. And again, like I say, outside the blogging realm, I'm a whole lot uneducated. I've used a couple of them in jobs I've had, but I can't tell you much about which is good and which is better and so on. But that's the kind of research that if you're starting a business and if you have, it depends on specifically what you, for example, a company that's selling products, you know, Amazon.com is going to use a product management system, but it's going to be totally different from the system that I use to manage my blog or podcast. See what I'm saying? Because it's not blog-based. You need to have products. You need to have records that go back to inventory and that go back to, that include reviews and access and links out to other elements of the content management system. So it really is kind of a function of what you actually need the system to do. And once you figure that out, then you've got to figure out the accessibility of the choices that are available to you.
Very interesting. Right. Drupal is so flexible in its templates, though. You could make you could make a Drupal site look however you want, however you would want. So I think Drupal.
That's true.
I think Drupal. You could get away with doing it with Drupal, and people probably wouldn't even know you're using Drupal.
The cool thing about Drupal is, you know, the cool thing about a lot of these content management systems is that, you know, for most of your site, for 80 or 90% of your site, you might be using the content management system, but then you might have a shopping cart or you might have some other package or customized code that you built yourself, and then you can integrate that. There's a number of ways usually to integrate those elements into your site.
We had one more question. Go ahead, what, Shelley?
I was just going to ask, are there tools for Drupal, or do you have to hand code stuff in order to get a tool?
There are tools. There's a lot of
there
management.
There are tools, and if you want to hand code, you can.
And there's lots of modules as well for Drupal. There's tons of them. Mm-hmm. Okay, we had one other question from Tim, and I think I might be able to take a stab at this, and you guys, because we're kind of short on time, and we have one other caller, too. Tim was asking about off-the-shelf software. And I think it probably goes without saying that the best thing to do in reference to that is to check with current, you know, blind Mac enthusiasts and blind Mac users to find out if an application is indeed accessible. That being through the Mac Visionaries list or some other way, before you just go out and purchase something that may or may not be accessible. Do you guys think that would be pretty a safe bet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, a lot of off-the-shelf software, you can get demos. So, I mean, there's no reason you couldn't just try something out and see if it's accessible.
Good. Well, John Gunn is with us. John, we are really short on time. So if you have a quick question, that would be great. We got about 1 minute to talk with you here, and then we're going to have to start closing stuff up here.
Just a quick comment. You know, we talked about Leopard and VoiceOver, this kind of thing. I have also AppleCare, which is their support, and so on and so forth. Last Thursday, last week, my iBook went south. I had to call AppleCare, and they said I'd be receiving a box within 2 to 3 days so I can send it back. I received the box Friday afternoon. They got it in Memphis this morning. I just called for the repair status, and it's all fixed. What went on, I'm not really quite sure. But that's pretty darn impressive, and that's all I got.
Okay, well, thanks, John, and that's great. That's a great great thing to say about Apple. There, we're going to close the phone lines now, and I want to give our panel an opportunity to give some. No, wait, Daryl, you had one question. I don't know if we can see.
Yeah, there was
in.
A question that I think Shelley.
Yeah, Peter wants to ask Shelley about. How do the low vision accessibility features on a Mac compare to, say, running Zoom text on Windows, if you have any experience in that area?
really quickly, I would say that they're easier because they're part of the operating system.
Uh-oh. I think, I'm not sure who in the Skype tree is.
I say because of Mac, because I can invoke them in and out really easily. I don't use magnification so much, but my experience with Zoom Text has been better with magnification than it has been on the Mac, just because the Mac is a little herky-jerky. Like if you're moving around the screen at a magnified level, it'll kind of jump around. But for my purposes, because I'm mostly using reverse video, I find it works a little better on the Mac. I think your mileage may vary is probably the short answer, and just depends on your own visual acuity and also just your comfort level.
So they should go to an Apple store, perhaps, and check it out?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Great, okay.
And Command-Option-Control-8 will get you into the reverse video right away. So if the tech doesn't, the guy who you talk to at the Apple store doesn't know, just Command-Option-Control-8 will get you in, and you can start fooling around with it.
Great, okay. Well, now, we're going to be bringing back our Mac panel next month, the second Tuesday. And Shelley, if you're available, we'd love to have you come back. We'll, I don't know if you can.
I'll try my best. I'll look at my calendar.
Wonderful. Okay, great. That would be great. And we're not really sure yet what we're going to talk about. We'll, I think we'll talk with Darcy and Holly and maybe shoot you an email too, Shelley, and see what kind of ideas you got there. And then, but listeners, if you have any specific topics you want discussed, get them to us tonight. Give us about an hour or two to get the phone line switched around and everything. And you can call and leave a message on the main menu number, 866-400-5333, and we'll definitely get it and disseminate that information to those that need it. So, all right, let's let all of you give some contact information. Shelley, we'll let you go first. How can we find you on the net?
Well, I'm at shelleyspodcast.com, shellyspodcast.com, but I want to plug Blogger and Podcaster Magazine. I'm the editor-in-chief there. But the main reason I want to plug it here is that we do that magazine in podcast form as well as in printed and digital form. So if you go to feeds.feedburner.com/blogger and podcaster, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is the full version of each monthly magazine in audio format.
Great. Okay, Darcy and Holly, we got about 1 minute.
All right. Okay, well, first is our Mac podcast, which is www.screenlessswitchers.com. You can check that out. You can also check out another Mac site we really like, which is www.lioncourt.com. And finally, if you want to hear our personal podcast, you can check that out at www.darcyandholly.com.
All right, well, great.
Is there anything?
Mr. Speedy Gonzalez over there. There you go. Woohoo! Okay.
Well, you said we were on a time limit.
Sorry. No. That's great. Okay, great. Okay, we'll see you guys back in February, and if you can hold on a second, we'll be right back with you. Coming up next week, we're going to be hearing from Dean Martineau all about keyboard magic. That's right, keyboard within Windows Vista, Office 2007, tweaking your keyboard keys, and all kinds of keyboard fun. As well as we're going to start a series on the ID Mate Omni. So that's what's coming up next week. We will not have a main menu live. So take care, everybody, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Good night, everybody.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.